Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Story one. I'm Jake, and I live in a tiny town called Escalante, Utah. About 800 people, no traffic lights, one grocery store, an endless desert all around. I've been hiking these canyons since I was a kid. You grow up out here and you learn to respect the land. The rocks, the heat, the silence. It all feels like it's watching you sometimes. But what I saw last spring, I still don't have the right words for it. All I know is it wasn't normal. It happened during a solo hike out by Coyote Gulch. I usually avoid going out there alone for too long, but I needed space. I'd just gotten laid off from the Park Service and was trying to clear my head. I packed light, water, snacks, my .22 just in case, and started early in the morning. I planned to hike the rim and loop back around before sunset. It was quiet, the kind of silence you only get in the desert, where even the wind sounds like it's holding its breath. Around mid-afternoon, I reached a high ridge. From there, I could see across to another sandstone formation about a football field away. That's when I noticed them, two coyotes trotting along the other ridge. They looked normal at first, just desert dogs doing what desert dogs do. I stopped walking and watched them. I've seen plenty of coyotes out here, but something about the way these two moved. They were too in sync, like they were pacing each other deliberately. Then the one in front stopped, and it stood up, not like a dog stretching or anything. It stood on two legs, straight up, and it didn't fall over or wobble. It stood like a man. My first thought was that my eyes were playing tricks on me. I blinked hard, rubbed them, took a step forward and squinted, but it was still there, standing, looking around, just casually scanning the horizon, like someone deciding which trail to take. The other coyote had stopped and was sitting on its haunches, just watching. I didn't move. I didn't even breathe. My heart was pounding so hard it felt like my chest was going to crack open. Then it walked, down the other side of the ridge, just like that. Not like a bear or a primate, like a man. Arms swinging slightly, head forward, stride steady, and it didn't run. It strolled, like it had all the time in the world. The way someone walks out to get the mail on a Sunday morning. I didn't realize I was whispering until the words left my mouth. What the fuck? As soon as I said it, the other coyote, still on four legs, turned its head and looked directly at me. I know how dumb that sounds. I know animals look in your direction sometimes. But this wasn't that. This thing saw me. Its eyes met mine across that 100 yards, like it had been waiting for me to speak. And then it smiled. I swear on everything, its lips pulled back just slightly, not like baring teeth, like a grin. My knees went weak. I stumbled back a step and nearly fell. When I looked back up, both were gone. Just gone. Not walking, not running, no dust trail. The ridge was empty. The sun hadn't moved. There was no wind, no noise, no birds. I stood there in silence, sweating and shaking, staring at the spot where it had stood. I should have left right then. Turned around and headed back to the truck, but I was frozen. My body wouldn't move for what felt like a full 10 minutes. My breathing was shallow and my mouth was dry, like I'd swallowed cotton. Every instinct I had was screaming at me to leave. Eventually, I got my legs working again. I didn't run. I didn't want to turn my back on whatever that was. I walked backwards for a while, then turned and kept going, heart hammering, checking over my shoulder every few seconds. I made it back to my truck just before dark, locked the doors, and didn't say a word the entire drive home. When I told my brother about it, he asked if I'd been drinking. I hadn't. I haven't touched alcohol since 2020. My neighbor said it might have been a skinwalker. I didn't laugh. I'd always thought that was just a Navajo legend, something told to kids to keep them close to camp. But now, I don't know what I saw, but I know it wasn't a coyote. And it sure as hell wasn't a man. It was something in between, something that shouldn't exist, but does. And it saw me. I haven't hiked alone since. Story 2. I used to go to school in a small college town in Pennsylvania, the kind of place where the sidewalks curled up at night and the only thing open past midnight was a gas station that always smelled like burnt popcorn. I shared an off-campus apartment with a guy named Nathan. We weren't party kids. We were weird in the way only sober kids can be at 2 a.m., just restless and curious, wandering around because our heads were too loud to sleep. It was early October, I think. There was a bite in the air and the wind smelled like dying leaves. Nathan and I were cutting across town, headed for the park just to kill time. That's when we saw it. A calico cat sprawled in the gutter in front of an old bookstore. Not just dead, flattened. Its head looked crushed in, and there was this shiny black smear of something seeping into the curb. I could see the orange and brown blotches on its fur, even under the yellow streetlight. We didn't stop long. Nathan mumbled something like, "Damn, poor thing," and we kept moving. The park was dead quiet. We didn't talk much, just walked. 40 minutes later, we looped back the same way. As we came up the street again, a car passed behind us, headlights slicing across the sidewalk. That's when I saw it, a calico cat, same pattern, big orange spot on the face, just like the one in the gutter. It was trotting across the road, tail held high, like nothing had happened. I stopped walking. "Dude," I said, "that's the cat." Nathan didn't say anything, but I saw his eyes follow it. We jogged the rest of the way to the spot by the bookstore. The greasy smear was still there, same streetlight, same cracked sidewalk, but the body was gone, not moved, gone, like it had never been there at all. We didn't talk much on the way back. I think we both wanted to convince ourselves we imagined it. Maybe it was a different cat. Maybe we just assumed the first one was dead. Maybe someone cleaned it up. We threw out a dozen maybes and none of them stuck. That would have been it. A weird story to tell people during late night hangouts, except something happened that made it stick in my brain like a thorn. A week later, Nathan and I came back to the apartment after class and found a note taped to our door. It was from our RA, Dana. Said she needed to talk to us about the animal situation. We looked at each other, already confused. We didn't have a pet, so we knocked on her door and she didn't even say hi. Just looked at us, said come with me, and led us straight back to our room. She opened the door, stood there for a second, like she expected to see something jump out, then frowned and stepped inside. "This doesn't make any sense," she said. "One of the groundskeepers told me he saw a cat in your window this morning. Said it was white with brown and orange spots." I froze. Nathan just muttered, "We don't have a cat." Dana looked around the room again, like she didn't believe us. "I mean, yeah, I can see that now. Sorry, guys, just weird." She left. We didn't say anything until the door shut behind her. Then Nathan just said, "It's that cat." I tried to laugh it off. "So what, it's a ghost now?" "I don't know," he said, and walked into his room without another word. That night, I had trouble sleeping. I kept staring at the window, even though we were on the second floor. My desk lamp flickered a couple times, which it never did before, but it was probably just old wiring. Probably. It all built up to that one night, the last time I saw it. I was alone in the apartment. Nathan had gone home for the weekend, and I stayed behind because I had a midterm to study for. Around 1:30 a.m., I got hungry and went into the kitchen to microwave some leftover spaghetti. The kitchen has one of those long, narrow windows over the sink that looks down into the alley behind the building. I never pulled the blinds shut. Not sure why. The microwave was humming, the plastic container rotating slowly, and I glanced out the window. The calico cat was sitting on the fire escape, just sitting there. Its head was cocked sideways and one eye looked cloudy. The other one stared straight at me. I didn't move. I don't mean I froze. I mean my body wouldn't move, like something was pressing down on my shoulders, locking my legs. I couldn't even breathe right. My skin went cold. It wasn't like fear. It was like something inside me was being stared into, like the cat knew things about me it wasn't supposed to. And then, without breaking eye contact, the cat stood up on the railing. It arched its back, and it did something that should not be possible. It turned inside out. No blood, no gore. It just folded into itself like a sheet of paper crumpling in slow motion, the fur sucking into blackness, bones cracking gently inward like twigs under a blanket. The final shape wasn't even a shape. It was just this writhing, twitching mess of color and shadows that hung there for a second like a spider suspended in the dark. Then it vanished. I dropped my food. The plastic container exploded on the floor. I didn't even clean it up. I went into my room.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Room, locked the door, turned on every light, and didn't sleep until the sun came up. I moved out before the semester ended. Story 3. I grew up in a small town in southern Oregon. Quiet, foggy, and boring as hell once the sun goes down. This happened when I was 19, during the fall, maybe late September. I was crashing with my buddy Derek for a couple weeks while sorting out some issues with my family. His place was in this older, half-abandoned neighborhood where every third house was boarded up and overgrown. Even during the day, it looked dead. One night, around 2 a.m., we got restless and decided to go on a walk. We weren't drunk, just wired from too much caffeine and no sleep. I remember it was cold enough that our breath came out in clouds, but not freezing. We stuck to the side streets, walking in that aimless way people do when they're just trying to burn off the silence. We turned down this narrow road I'd never noticed before, even though I'd passed the area plenty of times. No streetlights, just a string of crumbling houses, a few trees, and a long strip of uncut grass running along the sidewalk. A little ways in, I noticed three dogs trotting up toward us from the shadows, silent, no barking. "Yo, check out those dogs," Derek said, nudging me. They didn't seem aggressive. Their tails were low but wagging, moving slow like pendulums. One was white, one black, and the third looked like a washed-out gray, almost silvery. They weren't strays, at least they didn't move like strays. They were too deliberate, too steady, but they didn't have collars either. And they were big, I mean really big, at least waist-high on me, and I'm not short. They were thin, not starved, but built in a way I've never seen before in dogs. Their legs were long, their heads too narrow, like a coyote's but stretched. Their fur looked too smooth, almost like it had a sheen. The white one walked in front, the black and gray slightly behind it, keeping perfect distance like they were trained. But there was no one else on the street, no sound, just us. Derek reached out to the gray one, maybe to pet it or see if it'd sniff his hand, and it didn't react, just kept pacing alongside us. All three of them walked in sync with us for about a mile. No barking, no sniffing, not even any tail chasing or playfulness, just calm and quiet. I tried to laugh it off, said something like, maybe they're someone's pets. But Derek didn't laugh. You ever seen dogs move like that? I hadn't. We got to this hedge near the edge of the neighborhood. I remember it clearly because it was a short circular bush, maybe 4 feet across, planted in front of a brick mailbox. The kind of thing you'd see in front of a house. But this house was abandoned, no windows. The porch had collapsed. The dogs all stopped at the hedge. they circled at once. The black one sniffed around, then the white one lowered its head and slipped through a small gap between the branches. Too small for anything that size, but it went in smooth like water. No sound, no rustling. The gray one followed, then the black. One by one, gone, not a sound. No crunch of leaves, no movement inside the hedge. We both walked around it, saw all sides. Nothing, no space behind it, no way through. I crouched, even stuck my arm in. Nothing but branches, dry leaves, dirt. They vanished. We stood there for a good minute in total silence. My ears started ringing, not from noise, but from how quiet it got. No wind, no distant cars, just nothing. Derek finally said, "That wasn't normal." That's all he said. We turned and walked fast back to his place. Not quite running, but not strolling either. The next morning I brought it up again, and he just shook his head. We didn't see what we think we saw. But I know what I saw. I'm not saying it was a ghost or a demon or a spirit. I'm just saying three unnatural dogs followed us down a dead street, moved like they were being remote controlled, and disappeared into a hedge without a sound, without leaving a trace. I haven't seen them since. Story 4. I live just outside of Flagstaff, Arizona. Pine forests, dry air, and long quiet nights. I rent the basement level of a two-story house about 15 minutes from town. It's quiet down here. Too quiet sometimes. The landlord lives upstairs and we rarely see each other. I like it that way. This happened last winter, mid-January. Cold as hell outside, but the inside of my apartment always stayed a little too warm, like the insulation held heat just a bit too well. That week had already been heavy. My girlfriend Megan had to put her dog down. Tyson, a big aging boxer with a sweet, slow way about him. I love that dog, even if he wasn't mine. The kind that follows you from room to room and sits on your feet whether you want him to or not. We buried him in her backyard under a spruce tree. The ground was so frozen it took me half the day to dig the hole. Megan couldn't stop crying. I held it together for her, but I felt something crack in me that day. Tyson had been a constant presence for years. Afterward, I stayed the night at her place, then came back to my apartment the next morning. That night, I had this weird dream. I was standing in the kitchen, and I saw Tyson pad in from the hallway, tail wagging gently, head cocked to the side like he was waiting for something. I turned to Megan. She was suddenly in the dream, and I said, "Did you see that?" She didn't respond, just stared blankly. Then I woke up. I chalked it up to grief. Normal, right? Dogs leave a hole in your life. Dreams like that help you fill it for a second. But three nights later, it got worse. I remember falling asleep unusually fast. No tossing, no restless thoughts. Just out cold. I had one of those heavy dreams again. The kind where your limbs feel pinned down, like you're sinking into the bed. Except this time, I could feel something in the room with me. I was lying on my back, covers up to my chest, and I felt weight, real, physical weight, pressing down on me, like something had jumped on the bed and was standing on me. My first thought wasn't ghost or paranormal. It was, did a raccoon get in? That's how real it felt. But then I realized it wasn't moving. It just sat there, right on my chest. The air got weird, thicker, hotter. I couldn't breathe right. I tried to move, but my arms were locked in place. I've had sleep paralysis before, once or twice. This was not that. I forced my eyes open, slowly. I had to push through this. I don't even know what to call it, like trying to lift my eyelids through molasses. The room was dark, but not pitch black. A little moonlight crept in through the small basement window. That's when I saw it. The shape. It was Tyson, or something that looked like Tyson, sitting on my chest, not standing like a dog would. Sitting upright, legs bent at the joints, but the posture was all wrong. His head tilted too far, ears slack, mouth slightly open, but he wasn't panting, just hanging there. Dead eyes, glossy, pitch-black marbles, and he was staring right at me. I wanted to scream. I tried, but all that came out was this weak rasp. My throat wouldn't work. My chest burned with pressure. I felt like I was being held down, not just by weight, but by something deeper, emotional, spiritual. I don't know. It felt wrong. Like this thing wasn't Tyson at all. It was wearing his shape. I kept staring, unable to move, my eyes starting to water, when it did something that made my blood go cold. It smiled, not like a dog. It pulled its lips back slowly, showing way too many teeth. Its whole face stretched. I heard this faint creaking noise, like old wood under strain. That's how I knew it wasn't Tyson. I knew then that I had brought something else back with me. Or maybe Megan had. Or maybe it was always around, just waiting. The silhouette started to fade, slowly, like smoke in reverse. Thick and opaque one second, then thinning out until there was nothing but air pressing down on me. I gasped, sat up. I don't know how long I'd been holding my breath. My chest felt crushed, ribs sore like I'd been in a car accident. I sat there for a long time, soaked in sweat, hands shaking. I checked the time, 3:11 a.m. I didn't go back to sleep that night. Story 5. I'm not the kind of person who tells ghost stories. I never believed in anything like that. But something happened to me 4 years ago, and I haven't been able to shake it since. My name's Darren. I used to live in Northwood Pines, just outside Concord, New Hampshire. It's deep woods out there. No streetlights, long winding roads, thick trees that swallow your headlights. I rented a small cabin while working the night shift at a logistics warehouse. Got off around 1 a.m. most nights. The job was mindless. The drive home was worse. Now, this wasn't one of those cute mountain cabins with fireplaces and welcome mats. It was old, drafty, buried in trees, and dead quiet at night. And I don't know if I was just overtired, but for about 3 weeks, I kept getting this feeling that something was watching me. Not from inside the house, outside, from the woods. First, it was footsteps. That soft crunching of leaves when you're sure you're alone. I'd pause while unlocking my door, and it would stop. Once I left my porch light on and came home to find it shattered, bulb and all. No sign of an animal, no wind, just the busted bulb and a weird smell, like burned hair. I told myself I was being paranoid. Long hours, no social life, too much caffeine. But then came the shadows. You know when a person walks past a light source and you catch their shadow stretching out? Well, there were no light sources in those woods, but I kept seeing movement, shapes, just outside the edge of my headlights when I pulled into the drive. Once, I swear, a figure stood between two trees as I parked. Tall, still. I blinked and it was gone. By that point, I'd started keeping a crowbar in my passenger seat. Not that I thought it would help, I just felt helpless. My sleep got worse and I started dreading the drive home. That road was always empty. No cars, no wildlife, just black trees and the occasional mailbox. It was a Thursday night when it happened, early October. The air had that bite, but no snow yet. I was driving back as usual, music off, windows closed, just me and the sound of the tires on the pavement. There's this one bend before the final mile to my cabin, a big curve with a steep drop on the right and woods rising up on the left. It was just as I was rounding that corner that I slammed on the brakes. He was standing right there at the edge of the tree line. A stag, but not like any I've ever seen. He was silver, not white, not gray. Silver. He shimmered like moonlight on water, like he was lit from the inside. And he was huge, easily the size of a car. Antlers wide as a doorway, eyes that looked ancient. Not like an animal, like something older. I just stared. I couldn't move, couldn't breathe. My headlights lit him perfectly and he didn't flinch. He just stared back at me. I didn't feel fear though, not exactly. My body was shaking, but inside I felt something strange. Calm, almost like I wasn't supposed to be afraid. "I'm dreaming," I muttered. "I fell asleep at work. This isn't real." I actually closed my eyes for a second, just to test it, to break the illusion. And when I opened them, he was gone. Gone. Like he'd never been there. I sat in the car, parked in the middle of the road, engine running, trying to make sense of it. I even got out and walked to the spot where I saw him. There were no hoof prints, no rustling, just silence. Even the crickets had stopped. But here's the part that really messed me up. After that night, the shadow stopped. No more figures in the woods. No more footsteps, nothing. The silence felt clean. Whatever had been hanging around, it was gone. I didn't see the stag again, not even a glimpse. But something about that moment stayed with me, like it changed something in me. I moved out 3 months later, but I think about him all the time. I never told anyone until now. Because how do you explain that? That some ancient silver animal stared into your soul and everything dark around you vanished? But I felt it. He wasn't just some freak animal or hallucination. He was something else, something watching over me, or maybe warning me. I'll never forget the way he looked right at me like he knew who I was, like I was just another shadow passing through his woods. And whatever those shadow things were, I think he scared them more than they scared me. I still dream of that bend in the road sometimes, and every time I hope I see him again. But I never do. Story 6. I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, not exactly the backwoods, but close enough that weekend trips into the country were normal. My buddy Wes had an uncle who owned a private campground down in the southern part of the state, near the Wayne National Forest. We were 16, stupid, invincible, and obsessed with doing things that felt like they meant something. That summer, six of us decided to spend a weekend camping out there. No adults, just us and whatever was in those woods. It was late, around 11 p.m., when it happened. We'd all been screwing around near the fire pit, smoking Swisher sweets and daring each other to jump off the dock into the lake. But someone brought up the old pool at the front of the property, the one that hadn't been used in years. It was overgrown, half-drained, and supposedly filled with frogs the size of dinner plates. So, of course, we grabbed flashlights and started walking down the gravel road toward it. I remember the air that night. It had that heaviness right before a storm hits, but the sky was totally clear. Dead quiet, too. Even the crickets had gone silent. Wes noticed it first. He stopped and said, "What the hell is that?" We all turned and looked about 60 yards up the road. There was something crossing. It was big, black, low to the ground, moving like a panther or something. It was too far for our flashlights to fully catch it, but the way it moved made every hair on my body stand up. It was smooth, too smooth, like it wasn't touching the gravel, just gliding across. "Mountain lion?" Eric whispered. But then it stood up. I swear to God, that thing stood up on two legs, like a person, like it decided it didn't want to crawl anymore and just shifted. Its back legs stretched out and it turned toward the woods, walking upright like a man, not like an animal rearing up to threaten or look big. Number this was something that walked, confident, casual, like it belonged on 2 feet. None of us said anything, not at first. We just stood there, dumbfounded. It made it across the road and slipped between the trees. No sound, no rustling, nothing. Wes finally spoke, almost laughing, but it came out all wrong. "What the, I don't know, was that?" "I'm not the only one who saw that, right?" I asked. "Bro," said Dev, "that thing stood up." We were frozen for a second until, being teenage idiots, curiosity kicked in. We all ran up to the spot, flashlights bouncing off the trees and gravel. I remember my heart hammering so hard I felt dizzy, but none of us wanted to admit we were scared. There were no tracks on the gravel, nothing we could follow. Just that same strange stillness, like the woods were holding their breath. "It went in right here," Eric said, pointing at a thin opening in the tree line. "Should we?" "No," I said immediately. "Hell no." But Wes was already aiming his flashlight between the trees. "Just a little bit. Come on, dude. We came all this way." He stepped forward and I grabbed his arm. "I'm not going in there." That's when the smell hit us. It came out of nowhere, heavy and sharp, like wet dog fur and iron. We all smelled it at once and just recoiled. Dev gagged. "It wasn't like anything I've smelled before or since. Something primal, wrong, like something was rotting and still alive at the same time." And then we heard the sound. It was low, a grunt, a growl. I don't know, but it came from the woods, from just past where the thing had disappeared. Not loud, but close, real close, like it was right behind the tree line, like it had stopped to listen to us. That was it. No one said anything. We just ran. Back to the campsite, flashlights flying, tripping over roots, yelling at each other to go faster. No one looked back. We didn't stop running until we were by the fire pit again. Every one of us gasping, wide-eyed, pale. No one spoke for a solid 10 minutes, just the fire crackling. Eventually, Wes said, "I'm not going back down there." Ever Dot, none of us argued. We all slept in the same tent that night, all six of us, jammed into a four-person tent like scared little kids. No one joked about it the next day. No one tried to explain it. We just packed up and left early, without even saying goodbye to the place. I asked my dad about mountain lions when I got home. He said they were rare in Ohio, nearly unheard of. And no, they don't walk on two legs. We never went back to that campground again. Wes's uncle eventually sold the property. I think about it sometimes, though, how it moved, how it stood and walked away from us like it knew we'd follow. I don't know what we saw that night. Maybe it was some spirit of the forest, something older than we understand. Or maybe there's something out there that just wears the skin of an animal, waiting for people stupid enough to get close. Either way, I never go into the woods after dark now, not even in my own backyard. Story 7. We were snowed in that morning. No school, no work, just silence. The kind of silence that presses in on your ears. My girlfriend lived out past the ridge, maybe 15 minutes from the nearest paved road. Middle of nowhere kind of place, with woods on three sides and a long gravel driveway that disappears into tree cover. I was half awake under her blankets, the room still dim because the curtains were drawn and the snow outside made everything feel blue. She was still asleep beside me. I was just laying there, listening to the hum of the space heater at our feet when I heard it. A man's voice, clear as day, right outside the window. "Get down, they're going to be able to see you if you don't get down." I froze. I didn't move for maybe two full seconds. Then I sat up fast, pulled the curtain aside just enough to peek out. There was a guy out there, pale hoodie, jeans, back facing me. Three dogs with him, all large like shepherds or mutts. They were walking along the side of the house, headed toward the detached garage. I don't know what kicked in, maybe instinct, but I grabbed the Glock from the top drawer of her dresser. I told her to stay in bed and not move. She sat up, confused, but when she saw my face, she didn't say anything else. I pulled on my boots, no socks, and ran to the back door. It took maybe 10 seconds from when I saw them to when I got outside. The snow was still clean and fresh, no wind, and every sound seemed sharper than it should have been. They were gone. I don't mean like they walked off and I couldn't see them anymore. I mean they were gone, no one in sight. But there were footprints. Shoe prints and paw prints, about 5 feet from the window where I'd seen them. I followed them around the corner of the house toward the garage. Still no one. The prints led out toward the back of the property, so I kept going, trying to follow. There was no noise, no barking, no movement, just me and those tracks. About 100 yards into the woods, something changed. The shoe prints stopped. No signs of anyone turning or walking off the trail, just a full stop. But the paw prints kept going. I followed them another 10 yards before I noticed something strange to my left. More paw prints, a separate trail. These ones came from the woods, not toward them. They led right up to the edge of the trees and pointed straight toward the house. That's when my stomach dropped. I followed those up toward the house, back the same way I'd come, and about 25 yards from the house, the shoe prints suddenly appeared again, mid-stride, like the man just popped into existence. No overlap, just one moment, animal prints. Next moment, human and animal side by side. That was the point I stopped walking. I looked around. No wind, no birds. The air had this heavy, stale feeling, like holding your breath underwater. I suddenly felt like I was being watched, but I couldn't tell from where. That stretch of woods was quiet, too quiet, and I swear even the snow under my boots didn't crunch anymore. Then something snapped. It wasn't a sound, not really. It was this shift in the air pressure, like a vacuum seal had been broken behind me. I spun around, gun raised, nothing. But the paw prints beside me, they were moving. The snow was flattening in a line, right there in front of me, step by step, like something invisible was walking through it. I stepped back once, twice, and it kept coming. Prints forming one after another, slowly, like it knew I was watching. I turned and ran. I didn't think. I didn't care about the trail. I bolted straight for the house, boots slipping on the snow. When I got inside, I slammed the door and locked it, dropped the gun on the table, and just stood there panting. My girlfriend ran out of the room in a panic, asking what happened. I couldn't explain. I told her to lock every door and stay inside. Later, when we went out together in the afternoon, because I didn't want to be alone, we checked the whole property again. The tracks were gone, every one of them. Not faded, not blown away. Gone, like the snow had reset itself. But I know what I saw, and I know what I heard. Get down! That voice still echoes in my head sometimes, like it wasn't talking to me, like it was warning something else. I never found any dogs that lived nearby. No missing person reports, no hunter passing through. And I've never seen prints like that since. But I check now, every winter. I check the snow before I leave the house, because something was out there, and it walked on two legs and four, and it watched us from the trees. Story 8. I was living with my girlfriend's family for the summer. This was in 2013, in a little town outside Sheffield. We were both just 19, still under tight watch, so I had to sleep in the lounge on one of those miserable pull-out sofa beds. Not ideal, but it beat the bus ride back home every night. Her parents kept the front windows open because the house got stuffy in the summer, but that didn't help me much. My hay fever was bad that year. Really bad. I was up almost every hour wheezing and puffing on my inhaler, trying not to sound like I was dying. That night I'd woken up around 2 a.m. My chest felt tight again. I remember blinking into the dark, the light from the street lamp outside casting an orange slant through the curtains. Everything was quiet, and the room had that weird stillness to it, the kind that makes you hold your breath and listen. I was about to sit up when I felt something on me, not just weight, movement, on my chest. My heart jumped, but before I could freak out, I looked down and saw a cat, a sleek black cat, sitting right on top of me like it owned the place. It didn't hiss or act startled. It just looked at me, blinking slowly, then leaned into my hand like it wanted to be stroked. I hesitated, but I reached out and ran my fingers along its back. It purred. I figured it was one of her cats. I'd seen one earlier, a tabby with a bell. Her mum had told me they had two, but the other one was shy and probably wouldn't come out. So I took this one as a sign of approval. I smiled, half drugged from sleep and allergies, thinking, well, at least someone likes me in this house. After a few minutes, it climbed off me, padded across the room, and jumped into the armchair by the TV. Curled itself up, tucked its head in, and that was that. I drifted back off eventually. Didn't even think much of it until the next morning. We were in the kitchen eating toast, and I mentioned it to my girlfriend. Just casual, hey, your black cat finally decided to say hello last night. She stopped mid-chew and looked at me. We don't have a black cat. I blinked. Yeah, you do. Sleek little thing. Was on my chest half the night. She glanced at her mum. Her mum was washing up but turned around, drying her hands on a dish towel and said, you sure about that? I just stared at them. Her girlfriend said, we only have Momo and Tilly. Tilly's the tabby and Momo's the ginger and white one. They've never been black. Never. I laughed. Well, maybe you've got a third cat you don't know about. Her mum shook her head slowly. Years ago, we had a black cat. Midnight. Sweet old girl. She passed away. Must be 6 years now. She pointed toward the lounge. That chair by the TV, that was her favorite spot. I stopped chewing. My toast suddenly tasted like dust. I said, no, come on. You're messing with me. My girlfriend didn't laugh. She didn't say anything. I went back into the lounge. That chair, the one the black cat curled up in, was empty, of course. But I swear on everything, I could still see the dent. Like something had pressed into the cushion not long ago. Later that afternoon, I crouched down next to it. There were little black hairs clinging to the fabric. I even picked one up, held it to the light. I asked again, just to be sure. Are you sure your current cats don't have black fur? They didn't. The more I thought about it, the colder I felt. I'd felt the cat, the warmth of it, the way it leaned into my hand, the weight of it on my chest. And there's something else, Something I didn't tell them then, and I've never really told anyone properly until now. When it was sitting on me, just for a second, I had this feeling, like I couldn't move, not just sleep paralysis, like something was holding me down. I didn't think much of it at the time because I've had those moments when your body's just slow to wake up. But it wasn't like that. It was aware, like it knew I was watching it and it was watching me back. Not curious, not friendly, just observing. I never saw it again. Story 9. I grew up hearing my mom talk about this one night like it was a wound that never fully healed. I never believed her until I saw something with my own eyes, but her story always stuck with me. It's not one she likes telling anymore. She only told me once, when I was maybe 12, and the power had gone out during a thunderstorm. I remember the lightning flashing across her face while she talked, making her eyes look hollow. Back then, my mom was about 15. They lived on a patch of land way out in rural Arkansas. Real country. You'd have to drive 15 minutes just to hit a paved road. It was just her, her two sisters, and my grandmother, since my grandfather was deployed with the Navy. They kept a bunch of animals, chickens, goats, a couple of dogs, and two cats. One of the cats belonged to my mom's youngest sister, Abigail. It was gray, long-haired, and had the tip of its tail missing. Abigail named it Sooty because of its color. One afternoon, Sooty vanished. They looked everywhere, checked under the porch, around the barn, in the woods out back. Nothing. No blood, no fur, no signs of a struggle. Just gone. Abigail was crushed. 3 days went by. Then came that night. My mom said it was late, around 1 a.m. She'd stayed up reading in bed, listening to the goats bleeding off and on in their pen. She said it was weird. They usually quieted down after dark. But that night, they were restless, stamping around like something was spooking them. She finally got up to use the bathroom and heard one of the dogs bark once, sharp and alarmed, then silence. She peeked through the hallway window. Their backyard was small, fenced in, but just beyond that was thick brush and forest that crept right up to the property line. She said the moonlight was bright enough that night to see almost everything. That's when she saw something. It was near the fence, moving slowly, low to the ground. She squinted. Sooty, she thought. It looked just like her sister's cat. Same gray fur, same long tail, though she couldn't tell if the tip was missing from that distance. She figured the cat had come back and slipped through a gap in the fence. She started to go outside and call for it, but something stopped her. She doesn't know what. She just watched. It crouched near the chicken coop, totally still for maybe 30 seconds. Then it stood up. Not like a person, not on two legs, but it rose, like something too big had been crammed into the skin of something too small, and it needed to unfold itself. She said it grew. In the space of seconds, it wasn't cat-sized anymore. Its back arched up higher than the coop, and its legs stretched out, too long, too narrow. Its face, God, she said she'll never forget the face. It still looked like a cat, kind of, like someone had taken the head of a long-dead cat and stitched it onto a bigger body that didn't know how to walk right. It twitched with every step. Its joints jerked like they were on puppet strings. Then it turned its head toward the house. Not all the way, just enough. Its eyes were glowing, like animal eyes in the dark, but they didn't blink, not once. And my mom swore they were too far apart for any real animal. She backed away from the window. The thing started moving faster now, stiff-legged, glitchy, almost like it was trying to figure out how to run on limbs it had borrowed. Then it leapt. Not onto the porch, not toward the house, upper, straight into the wall, like it was trying to sink into it. My mom said the wall actually shook, just a little, like someone had smacked it from outside. And then it was quiet. She screamed. My grandma came running out of her room, her hair all wild, holding a broom like it could do anything against something like that. My mom was crying and shaking, pointing at the wall. Of course, when they went outside with flashlights, there was nothing. No prints, no fur, no damage to the wall. But the next morning, the dogs refused to go near that part of the yard. They'd growl at the wall and whimper when you dragged them close. And one of the goats had a huge gash across its side, like something clawed it. Clean, no ragged edges, No sign it caught on anything. But the worst part, what stuck with my mom, came the next night. She was lying in bed again, too scared to sleep. She kept the lamp on this time. Around midnight, she heard something scrape across her bedroom wall. Slow, deliberate. And then, just once, barely audible through the wood and plaster, something meowed. Except it wasn't a meow. She said it was low, stretched out, wrong, like someone who'd heard a cat meow once was trying to mimic it with vocal cords not built for it. She never slept in that room again. Abigail never got her cat back, but every so often someone would claim to see it, gray, long-haired, missing the tip of its tail, slinking along the fence line. Then it would vanish behind the trees. My grandmother had a priest bless the house not long after that. They moved a few months later. My mom still won't talk about it. She hates cats now. Can't stand to be around them. I used to think she was exaggerating, that maybe it was just some kind of predator, or she was half asleep and imagined it. Story 10. I live in a small town in southern Iowa now, but I grew up about an hour north, closer to Des Moines. This happened when I was 14, and I haven't talked about it with anyone in my family since. I don't know what they remember, if they remember anything, but I do. We were visiting my grandparents for a weekend. It was spring, muddy fields, gray skies, still cold enough at night that your breath came out in clouds. My parents had driven me and my younger sister up from our place. We hadn't been back in months. I didn't realize it until we were halfway through dinner, but something felt wrong. Not with the house or the people. Everything looked normal. Same creaky chairs, same food that my grandpa oversalted, same painting of the mallard ducks in the living room. It was just a feeling, like there was a draft in the house, even though the windows were shut. Something off. After dinner, like always, my grandpa stood up and clapped his hands. "Leftovers are Max's tonight," he said, and set a plate on the counter. He didn't say anything else. That's when I remembered Max, their old dog, big gray mutt that looked like a mix between a shepherd and a wolf. He was always tied up next to the shed on a long rusted chain. We used to feed him scraps and sneak out to play with him after dark. But Max had been gone for at least 2 years. I didn't say anything right then, but I looked at my mom. She didn't even blink. She just kept helping clean up. After a bit, I pulled my cousin Jess aside in the hallway. She was a year younger than me, and we'd always been close. I asked, "Did they get a new dog?" She looked confused. "What do you mean?" "Grandpa just said the leftovers are for Max." She froze for a second. "Max is dead. He died when I was 10. I remember. He had lumps in his throat, and they had to put him down." That matched what I vaguely remembered too. I nodded slowly. "Why did he say that then?" I asked. Jess didn't answer. She just looked unsettled. Later that night, we were all in the living room. The adults were playing cards. The younger kids were doing some game on the floor. Around 10 p.m., Jess nudged me and whispered, "You want to go out to the shed?" I said yes, even though I didn't really want to. We grabbed the plate of leftovers, steak fat, some baked potato skin, a few strips of gristle, and snuck out the back door like we used to do. It was cold and dark. No moon, just the porch light behind us casting long shadows across the yard. The shed sat near the back fence, half covered in ivy. The chain was still there, trailing from the corner into a pile of rotted leaves. The ground was soggy, our shoes making soft squelching noises in the dirt. We stood there a second, looking around. No barking. No sound at all, actually. Not even the usual night crickets. "Just leave the plate," I said. I didn't like how quiet it was. The silence felt aware. Jess bent down and set the plate near the chain. Then as she stood up, she froze. "What?" I asked. She didn't speak, just pointed toward the edge of the trees behind the shed. I turned, and that's when I saw it. Something big, the shape of a dog, definitely. Same height and build as Max, but it was too dark to see its color or its eyes. It stood perfectly still. No panning, no movement at all, just staring. Jess whispered, "Max?" The dog stepped forward. It didn't make a sound, not even the chain rustling. It moved like it was gliding over the grass, smooth and unnatural. Too smooth. I backed up a little. Jess was frozen in place, and I whispered, "That's not Max." and it wasn't. As it stepped into the faint light from the house, I saw it more clearly. It looked like Max, but the fur was wrong. Patchy, too thin in places, thick in others, like it had been stitched together. Its mouth hung open, not like a panting dog, but slack, like it had no jaw muscles. And its eyes, they weren't eyes, just black holes. No reflection, no light. It didn't blink. Jess whimpered. I grabbed her arm and said, "Run." We turned and sprinted back toward the house. I didn't look back. I couldn't. We slammed the back door shut and locked it. The adults looked up, surprised, but didn't say much. I think my mom thought we were just being dumb kids. But I peeked out the kitchen window a few minutes later. The plate was gone. Not knocked over, not chewed up. Gone. Like it had never been there. And the chain? It wasn't stretched out anymore. It was coiled neatly, like someone had wrapped it by hand. We never went near that shed again, and I never leave scraps out at night.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.